Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, December 11th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Vice President-elect Emmerson Mnangagwa says he stands ready to serve President Robert Mugabe wherever necessary to help improve the lives of ordinary Zimbabweans.
Well, happy, but with humility. The task is onerous, and I have to fulfill the aspirations of our people and the expectations of my party.
The National Constitutional Assembly takes President Robert Mugabe to court over the appointment of the two new vice president-elects, which it says is unconstitutional.
We believe that it's not possible for President Mugabe to appoint two vice presidents. We believe this is unconstitutional.
And MDCT youth condemn the ZANU-PF resolution at its just-ended Congress to revive the National Youth Service.
Vice President-elect Emmerson Mnangagwa says he stands ready to serve President Robert Mugabe wherever necessary to help improve the lives of ordinary Zimbabweans. In an interview with Studio 7 today, Mr. Mnangagwa, who is scheduled to officially be sworn in tomorrow, together with the second Vice President, Phelekezela Mpoko, says he's humbled by President Mugabe's decision to appoint him to such an important position.
Well, happy, but with humility. The task is onerous, and I have to fulfill the aspirations of our people and the expectations of my party.
So much has been happening, Mr. Mnangagwa, prior to this appointment in terms of factionalism and lately alleged threats on your life. Do you have anything to say about that?
Threats to my life are no more. I reduced throughout my 52 years of political life. It has become part of my life.
Many people, Mr. Mnangagwa, would want to know who really is Emmerson Mnangagwa.
He's a villager from Zishayani, brought up by the revolution, and he continues to serve his country as a revolutionary.
The burning issue for most people of Zimbabwe is the state of the country's economy. What is your role going to be in terms of improving the economy?
Governance is never an individual effort. Governance is a collective effort. I will continue to contribute in the collective aspect of our governance.
What would you say is top of the list of the things that you would want to address as the first vice president of Zimbabwe? Obviously, you have issues that you have looked at since you joined the liberation struggle, that you have always had a burning desire to say you want to see this addressed for the nation of Zimbabwe.
Is to assist my president in the implementation of Zimasset, because that addresses the needs and aspirations of our people across the board.
Over the years, there have been reports pitting you against the former Vice President Joyce Mujuru as rivals fighting to succeed President Robert Mugabe when he retires. What is your relationship with Mrs. Mujuru and all those stories that we were reading? Were they true by any chance?
No. Comrade Mujuru and myself are really colleagues. Armed struggle colleagues and comrades. And there's nothing of any enmity between me and her. You can also interview her. She'll tell you the same.
So what would you say were the source of those allegations that continue to come into the media, pitting you against each other?
It's a creation of the media.
Obviously, the president will be leading the creation of a new team that you will obviously be leading and working with him to make sure that you address the issues that Zimbabwe is facing right now. Would you have any role to play in terms of who you want to work with in taking Zimbabwe to that next level?
Obviously, yes. I think it is the vision of our leader, the president, that he must put up a new team. There's now a new team in the party side. Is also, he announced yesterday that he's going to have a new team in government. But I would believe that his vision and intention is to continuously make sure he's a team that can deliver. And I feel honored to be part of that team.
Emmerson Mnangagwa, the person, has remained largely an enigma. Some people even fear him, and some people love him. For those who fear you and all other Zimbabweans who don't really know you, what is your message to them as you prepare to take office as one of the country's vice presidents?
I believe that those who fear me are not honest people. They are afraid of relating to an honest person. And those who love me know that my life is a straight one, an open book.
And lastly, the name Ngwena, the crocodile. What is the source of this name? What does it mean?
I think this came from about 1964 during the Crocodile Group. I was among that group, the Crocodile Group, and I'm the only survivor. I think it comes from there, but other people may have their own interpretation.
For the young Zimbabwean who doesn't really know, what was the Crocodile Group?
It was the first trained group of comrades when we came in from China after our graduation from Nanking Military Academy in 1964.
That was Deputy President-elect Emmerson Mnangagwa speaking with us on the line from Harare. For Perspective, VOA reporter Ntungameli Nkomo, reached political analyst and PhD candidate at the University of Cape Town, Chamunorwa Madiridze, who says the acrimonious relationship between Mr. Mnangagwa and Mrs. Mujuru is real and not a creation of the media, as put by Mr. Mnangagwa.
The animosity was created, and it started when the first lady went around the country in a so-called Meet the People rallies, and she started denigrating the then Vice President, Dr. Mujuru. And this cannot be the creation of the media, when it was actually said. And as of late, the president denigrated that Vice President when she was still the Vice President, and at the Congress, all the placards were there denigrating Mujuru. What he can only say is that he wasn't in the middle of all this denigration or all this animosity. We never heard him saying anything negative about Mujuru, but those loyal to him were actually saying. And the media was just there to report what was being said and what was happening.
Mrs. Mujuru describes herself as a simple village girl from Dotito, while Mr. Mnangagwa calls himself a villager from Rishabane. What's in the village?
It's a way of trying to identify yourself with the masses, because they know it's a very important section of the society that will, in the end, view you and try to vote for you come elections. So this is just an attempt by the two politicians to just identify themselves with the masses of Zimbabwe who participated in the liberation struggle and who still form the bigger part of the electorate in Zimbabwe.
If Mr. Mnangagwa should become president as widely expected by his followers, do you see him having any role in the government for Mrs. Mujuru?
It's very unpredictable. But let me say, this is politics. So I think the two politicians know each other very well to such an extent that when the right time comes, they will be able to mend their relations. And it's not surprising that when Mnangagwa becomes president, he may appoint Mujuru to a certain position in government.
That was political analyst Chamunorwa Madiridze speaking to Studio 7's Ntungameli Nkomo on the line from Cape Town in South Africa. Not much is known by ordinary Zimbabweans about second Vice President-elect Mphekelekezela Mpoko, but he has been in the news on a number of times, apparently all for the wrong reasons. Mr. Mpoko was in the news in 2003 when he almost caused a diplomatic row with Botswana after he was accused of assaulting Botswana's Sunday Tribune reporter Hloniphani Chengeta. Chengeta filed criminal charges, but Mr. Mpoko was saved by diplomatic immunity. A member of the Media Institute of Southern Africa Botswana chapter, Ryder Khabatuse, told Studio 7 today that they were surprised to hear that he had been nominated vice president despite that incident. In 2009, Mr. Mpoko was again in the news for telling a workshop in Botswana that the Gugurahundi massacres of the 1980s were a Western conspiracy theory. In the meeting, Mr. Mpoko is alleged to have verbally attacked human rights lawyer Beatrice Mtetwa, accusing her and others of being sellouts. When contacted for comment, Mtetwa confirmed the incident but refused to be interviewed, saying she's not a politician. We reached the independent political analyst Dinizulu Macapulana, who says President Mugabe only chose Mpoko as his deputy for his personal political expediency.
We mustn't read beyond the fact that Mugabe is just playing a power game. In this particular case, Telegezela Mpoko is being used as a stick to beat up SK Moyo, who was becoming ambitious. It has been Mugabe's strategy to play politicians against each other. Whenever someone becomes ambitious, Mugabe pulls them back and promotes another person, just like he has done with Njuru and Mnangagwa. When Mnangagwa was becoming ambitious, looking at the throne, he pulled him back and put Joyce Njuru. When Joyce Njuru was just becoming hopeful, he has thrown her out and put Mnangagwa. It's just a power play. Like these people are all pawns in Mugabe's political power play.
Are we saying that he has maintained the Unity Accord of 1987 by nominating him?
In name and symbolically and ritualistically, we can say yes. But in practical and concrete terms, that Unity Accord doesn't transcend down to the people of Zimbabwe in their day-to-day existential experience. It's just there symbolically to manage political opinions and impressions, but that Unity Accord does not exist in reality. So people like Mpoko are just figurehead symbols that are meant to represent something that in reality and in experience is not available, I can say.
That was Dinizulu Macapulana, an independent political analyst. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Johannesburg, South Africa.
The National Constitutional Assembly, meanwhile, says it has instructed its lawyers to file an application in the Constitutional Court to stop President Mugabe from swearing in the two deputy presidents, presidential-elect, saying that their appointment violates the country's constitution. NCA spokesperson Maduk Chiwasa speaks with reporter Jonga Kandemiri about the matter.
We believe that it's not possible for President Mugabe to appoint two vice presidents. We believe this is unconstitutional. The option of President Mugabe appointing two vice presidents was only there soon after election, but he decided to have one vice president. So now it's not possible for him to suddenly come up with two vice presidents. That is very unconstitutional. And as far as it is clearly stipulated in paragraph 14, subparagraph 2 of the 6th schedule, which is clear, what he is simply supposed to do is to replace Mrs. Mujuru with one vice president, not with two vice presidents.
Many people may also be confused by this section of the law that you are quoting, because it says he must appoint not more than two vice presidents. And at this time, he has appointed only two vice presidents.
Yeah, but there's also a time factor that is there, which is what we are challenging as NCA.
That was Constitutional Assembly spokesman Maduk Chiwasa in Harare, speaking with reporter Jonga Kandemiri. Meanwhile, the MDCT says it will soon try to impeach President Robert Mugabe on allegations that he violated the constitution when he fired former Vice President Joyce Mujuru. MDCT spokesman Obet Gutu told the Newsday newspaper that the president did not follow the constitution in firing the former vice president. Studio 7 earlier on tried to contact VP-elect Mphekezela Mpoko to speak about the allegations in the stories that we did, but he was not available. He wanted questions. So we hope, Chris, that you will answer our questions.
Yes, Sandy.
I think the NCA do have a good case. I think their argument is sound. It does make sense, because that is what the Constitution says technically. I've looked at Section 14, Subsection 2. And it says that the appointment must be done without delay. And the only question here is whether the without delay is regarded as being as commencing from the time of the election, or is it a wider? Can it apply to other circumstances? There are two situations here, Gibbs. One, you could say it's without delay from the election, or they might say it's without delay from the time of appointment, whether they're doing a replacement of a vice president. But I think that the NCA have a strong point, because I think the applicable clause here is that it without delay from the election of the president. And what President Mugabe should have done in August 2013 when he appointed Vice President Mujuru would have been to appoint two vice presidents, and that would have complied with that provision.
Mr. Makaisa, give us your thoughts on how the Constitutional Court is going to handle this kind of case if it is brought before the courts.
I'm not sure whether they will be inclined to entertain the case at all. I suspect they will argue that this is a matter of executive discretion and that their hands are tied and that they are not going to interfere. I think they would be wrong to say that.
That was political analyst Alex Magaisa commenting on the NCA's application to the Constitutional Court. He spoke with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Kent in the United Kingdom.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kilohertz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
our panelists take a deeper look in goings-on in ZANU-PF, especially former President Joyce Mujuru and VP-elect Emmerson Mnangagwa's relationship.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A former U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney says the Central Intelligence Agency did exactly what the White House wanted in setting up an interrogation program for terror suspects following the September 11, 2001 attacks.
And Russian President Vladimir Putin has met with Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi in New Delhi as part of a one-day visit to discuss expanding energy and defense ties.
And the Palestinians are mourning a cabinet minister who died yesterday after clashes with Israeli police in the West Bank. Thousands of people, including Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, gathered today in Ramallah for the funeral procession of Ziyad Abu Ayyin. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
The appointments of former Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa and former diplomat Phelekezela Mpoko as vice president-elects has raised questions about their significance to President Robert Mugabe's security and ability to revive the economy. For perspective, Studio 7's Ndimiake Mwakalielie turned to two South African-based independent analysts, Mlamuli Nkomo and Paul Chimoswa. Chimoswa says while the two men's sacrifice to the country is unquestionable, what is their ability to help President Mugabe take the country any further than where it is?
With Mnangagwa, we all know, anything that has been violent against our people in Gukurawindi, the violent 2008 elections and so on, you know, it just leaves a bitter taste in the mouth. Although in terms of ZANU-PF, he is popular amongst their structures. As for Phelekezela, report Mpoko, from the little that we know here in South Africa, and I'm going to be straight about it, I don't try and philosophize. He is not well known for making efforts to unite Zimbabweans. Simon Kayamoyo, when he was ambassador here, there was very visible efforts to unite Zimbabweans of all origins. But Mr. Mpoko, some of his liaisons with people that are well known to be Mdoka's sympathizers, that are actually advocating for the division of Zimbabwe into two states, and he must actually come forward and put his credentials of unifying Zimbabweans on the table. Yes, he's got liberation struggle credentials. To that, we are grateful, both to Mnangagwa as well.
Thank you. Ms. Nkomo, your thoughts?
What stands out is that it is clearly something that goes against the tenets of our democracy. Above everything else, what President Mugabe did was to nominate people who are loyal to him.
If we look at the surprise package, Mr. Pelegezela Mpoko is not saying that he has not contributed anything to the country, but little is known publicly about his political profile. But what actually stands out is that Mugabe wants to cushion himself. He wants to surround himself with people that he can trust, with people that know that he owes them. So they will do everything in their power to be loyal to the person who appointed them.
The issue you've just raised, Mr. Nkomo, about security, of course, the issue has come up many times that President Mugabe fears leaving office because of human rights persecution charges that might be laid on him by various entities, including the ICC. What could possibly Mr. Mnangagwa and Mr. Mpoko guarantee him in that respect?
Mugabe has appointed people with a military and security background in as a way of ensuring their loyalty of the uniformed forces in case he is out of power, that he will not be actually prosecuted. So we are looking at the hardliners, people who are going to toe the same line that Mugabe has been pursuing, people who are anti-West.
Mr. Chimosha,
if you look at the securitization or militarization of the presidentium, as has happened now with the ZIPRA and the ZANLA senior figures taking over the vice president, that speaks for itself. But the one aspect that's not being talked about, to me, that's the elephant in the room. Every single forum you go, there is a rumor of an economic connection between the first lady and Mr. Mpoko. But it's not discussed publicly. And then when you talk...
That was independent political analyst Mlamuli Nkomo. Earlier, you heard from independent political commentator Paul Chimoswa. Both spoke with Studio 7's Ndimiyake Mwakalele from South Africa.
As Zimbabweans ponder the country's future following the shake-up in the leadership of the ruling ZANU-PF after its recent Congress, the MDCT National Youth Wing says it is strongly opposed to one of the Congress resolutions calling for the revival of the controversial National Youth Service Program. Correspondent Taura Ishaba has more.
Also complaining about the resolution is the Zimbabwe National Students Union, ZINASU, which says this is a ZANU-PF program, adding, not every youth in the country is ZANU-PF. Every student wishing to go to university or other tertiary institutions in the country would be required to go through the National Youth Service Training Program. Some National Youth Service graduates, popularly known as Green Bombers, have in the past been used by ZANU-PF in its campaigns, particularly targeting opposition supporters. In an interview with Studio 7 in Gweru today, National Spokesperson Brian Duve of the MDCT's Youth Wing said his party opposes and condemns the proposal to revive the National Youth Service Program. The revival of the program was one of the resolutions passed at the recent ZANU-PF Congress after the party's former youth secretary, Absalom Skosana, said the party's youth are in support of the idea. But Duve says it is senseless for ZANU-PF to revive the program when there is an urgent need to revive the economy so youths can get educated and get gainful employment.
We are extremely worried by the irresponsible nature of ZANU-PF. There is no need. We don't need National Youth Service in Zimbabwe. What we need is creation of jobs, period. And it's actually madness, I think, to actually suggest that in this point in time, their solution to the youth problems is to take them to border gaze training camps to be raped or to rape and be abused there. We just believe it's one of the indicators of the cluelessness of the ZANU-PF government.
Duwe also criticized the ZANU-PF government, saying it has failed the youth by not allocating enough money for grants for tertiary students.
As you would realize, they also do not care at all about the youth, as you would see, that they have allocated $1 million to cater for student grants for all universities and colleges in the country and allocate Mugabe $5 million to cater for his friends. And what we are saying is the presidential scholarship must be abandoned with immediate effect, and if President Mugabe wants to take anyone to a tertiary institution, he must use his money from Gushungu Holdings and convert that amount back to the student grants, which will benefit the greater part of the students and the youths in Zimbabwe.
Dube also scoffed at suggestions that ZANU-PF members should be given priority for vacancies in state-owned companies, saying such cronyism is what has caused the collapse of most parastatals or government companies. Dube said jobs in parastatals should be given on the basis of competency, not partisanship. Development Studies lecturer Didmus Dewa of the Zimbabwe Open University, speaking as an independent analyst, said although he agrees that for some jobs it is important to consider expertise rather than an individual's political affiliation, it is not surprising that ZANU-PF wants to reward its supporters.
Worldwide, you have seen that after elections, you find that those that are on the winning side will have its own people in positions of influence, in parastatals, in organizations of influence in that particular country. So to me, it's not something new. The 2008 election saw MDC gaining power in local authorities, and subsequently, the party went on to have its own members in the local authorities. So it's not new for ZANU-PF to do the same. But let me hasten to say that there are some jobs that require unique expertise. Such jobs cannot be reserved to a certain political party member.
Dewa also said he sees nothing wrong with the proposed reintroduction of the National Youth Service Program, but said it should not be used to indoctrinate youths with a partisan political ideology.
In Zimbabwe, again, nobody should really make noise about it. But the reason why people probably make noise is the issue around the curriculum, the indoctrination, the inclination of the curriculum towards a specific political party. What we request at this point in time is a revisit of the curriculum so that people are taught to be patriotic, people are taught Ubuntu, people are taught unity, people are taught development, people are taught things that are relevant to their day-to-day needs.
The National Youth Service Program was started in 2001 with the intended aim of empowering youths through life skills and leadership training. Reporting for Studio 7 from Gweru, this is Taurai Shava.
Thanks, Taurai. Coming up next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Suspected Islamic extremists are on the rampage in northern Nigeria, recently attacking a mosque, police facility, and a crowded market, killing more than 100 innocent people. The terrorist strikes are a blow both to the communities attacked and the civilized world as a whole. Early December 1st, insurgents entered Damaturu, capital of Yobe State in northeastern Nigeria, attacking a police station and sending students at a local university fleeing into the countryside. The same day, suicide bombers killed dozens in a crowded market in Maiduguri. On November 28th, an attack on the central mosque in Kano killed at least 100. While no group has taken responsibility for the attacks, the pattern of the strikes mirrors those favored by Boko Haram. Since 2009, when it began a campaign to overthrow the Nigerian government and replace it with a regime based on its own peculiar interpretation of Islamic law, the group has wreaked death and destruction across much of northern Nigeria. The group's insurgency has claimed the lives of more than 4,000 people and forced hundreds of thousands to flee their homes. At first targeting police and other government officials and facilities, Boko Haram has broadened its attacks to include churches, mosques, schools, media outlets, markets, and other civilian sites, leaving a trail of blood wherever it strikes. It drew international outrage this summer by kidnapping more than 200 young schoolgirls. It offered them as hostages for Boko Haram fighters being held by the government and later threatened to sell them. The girls are still missing. The United States condemns in the strongest terms all terrorist attacks on innocent civilians in northeastern Nigeria. We extend our deepest condolences to the families and loved ones of those killed and injured. These attacks again show Boko Haram's disregard for human life as it continues in its efforts to destabilize Nigeria. We stand with the Nigerian people in their struggle against violent extremism and the threat of terrorism, and we affirm our ongoing commitment to work with all Nigerians to combat these atrocities.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. And now a quick recap of today's top stories.
Vice President-elect Emmerson Mnangagwa says he stands ready to serve President Robert Mugabe wherever necessary to help improve the lives of ordinary Zimbabweans.
That's all for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm And I'm Sandra Nyaira, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night. Wishing you all the best and handing you over to Ntungamili and Standekile. Good night, Zimbabwe.